and shoulder fake to the rack. Oh, my goodness. Wayne Wade.
Caps up a three.
Bam! Jimmy Butler's big time onion.
Side jumper off the mark.
Oh, back of right hand. Felicia right in the mug of Miles Plumlee.
Throw it.
Oh, my.
Down,
gosh.
Big man. Throw it down.
On the new home of the Chicago Bulls, this is Chicago Bulls Live. And now, here's Steve Cashel.
Welcome in, everybody, to Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890, our weekly program inside the world of Chicago Bulls basketball and the NBA. I'm Steve Cashel. Coming up, we're going to hear from Will Perdue, former Bulls center, current NBA and Bulls analyst for CSN Chicago. Steve Ashburner, senior writer from NBA.com. Also hear from Bulls forward Taj Gibson and a visit with former NBA player Juwan Howard, who grew up in Chicago, had a long NBA career. But next to me, first up is Will Perdue, former Bulls center, current NBA analyst, and working for CSN Chicago, covering the Chicago Bulls. Will, thanks so much for joining us here on this Saturday night. Tell me first your assessment of the Chicago Bulls team now through the first quarter of the season.
Well, it's been hard to make an assessment because of the injuries, most notably to Doug McDermott and Michael Carter-Williams. I mean, that, as we've seen now, is pretty much the nucleus of that second unit coming off the bench. And I think it's hurt this team significantly as far as point production. And because of that, you know, Fred's had to play the starters a lot more minutes than he'd like. And I think that has shown lately over the fourth quarters, should we say. You've seen Jimmy's numbers since, I think it's November 19th, in the fourth quarter have dropped significantly, shooting percentage. I think you've seen it wear on Dwayne Wade a little bit, the way that Evan Turner was able to go at him the other night in that Portland game. So I think we've seen how good this team can be. For example, wins over Cleveland, the way they started off the season, the way that D-Wade and Butler have played well together. But it's almost like it's a painting that's incomplete yet, because there's still so many questions to answer, and because the team hasn't been healthy, it's really hard to make an assessment. The one thing you can tell, and you do know the answer to, they got to get much better on the defensive end of the floor, period. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that, regardless of the personnel that they have.
Visiting with Will Perdue. Will, too much relying on Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade right now?
Absolutely, but that being said, there hasn't really been anybody that's consistently stepped up. We all fully expected it to be Nico Mirotic, and he just hasn't had that consistency. You know, he had that really good game in Los Angeles where he went, 15-15? And then faltered after that. And then he stepped up and had 18 the other night, but then hasn't been able to follow up. He really hadn't been able to, as of late, been able to put two games together back-to-back from a scoring standpoint. Now, I like what he did last week against Cleveland. He was still struggling to shoot, but yet he made an impact on the defensive end of the floor. But I'd like to see him do that every single night. And I think, unfortunately for him, and we always talk about this more so about European players than American players, but they have a tendency to let how they're playing on the offensive end or how they're shooting affect what they do on the defensive end, and it should be the other way around.
You know, Will, Nico admits, and he wears his heart on his sleeve, he admits so much of this is mental with him. How do you get past that or deal with it?
Well, and this coming from experience, the one thing I do know, you can work too hard. You can think about it too much. You can focus on it too much. And I know, you know, with the teams I played on, and even championship teams, you step on the floor and you're like, I got to make an impact now, because if I don't, I'm coming out. And that's really hard to do. It's almost like a balancing act. Yeah, you want to put pressure on yourself to succeed, but you got to allow yourself to relax so that you can. And that's the hardest part, and that's the thing that we don't know with Nico. What's his makeup? What has he found in the past that's been successful when he's struggled? And not necessarily what's since he's been in the NBA, but what about, you know, back when he was younger and he was playing? Because this isn't the first time he's faced adversity. He's never faced adversity like this at this level with these type of expectations. So that's everything's magnified. But he, a lot of this is up to him, but a lot of it is also up to D-Wade, to Jimmy Butler, to Coach Fred Hoiberg. They got to help him figure it out.
Busy with Will Perdue, former Bulls center, current NBA and Bulls analyst with CSN Chicago. I'm Steve Cashel at Chicago Bulls Live. How about Bobby Portis, Will? 6'11", 250 pounds, just 21 years old. I couldn't wait for his second season, which is now. But so far, it hasn't worked out like we thought. Why?
I wish I had an answer because, you know, he showed progress last season. He, I thought, as a whole, played well in the summer league. And then just hasn't had that effect. The one thing that I do notice as a former big man, and he's not really a post-up player, but he's a big man. He's struggled, in my opinion, to battle in the paint. And I think that's where you see most bigs struggle the most, is to adapt to the physicality of the NBA game. You know, when he's floating on the perimeter and knocking down jump shots, that's one thing. But when he's got to get down in the paint and mix it up with the big guys to get rebounds, to get second-chance opportunities, to limit your opponent to one shot, that's where I've seen him struggle. Yeah, he can dunk the ball. He's explosive. But what I've seen so far is he plays up underneath the rim, and meaning he's a position-type player. And I've seen he's had problem getting that necessary position to be, you know, successful in the post when they've asked him to play in there with his back to the basket.
Our guest is Will Perdue, former Bulls center. Will, around the NBA, one of the big stories this week making headlines, Phil Jackson saying Carmelo Anthony of the Knicks, of course, sometimes holds the ball too long. He wants players to hold on to the ball for no more than 2 seconds after receiving a pass. You played for Phil for a number of years, won 3 championships with Phil. Was that the philosophy? Do you remember that exact phrase?
I don't remember that exact phrase, but I remember the one thing. Phil would stop practice, regardless of who it was, from Michael to Scotty to BJ to Horace to me to Scott Williams to Stacy. If you hold the ball too long, you're bogging down the offense, regardless of who you are. And the job on the offensive end is about flow, is about reading the defense. And if you hold the ball too long, you're taking too long to make the read, and then you're screwing up the other 4 guys on the floor because it's all 5 guys seeing the same thing. I don't think the triangle is complicated. I think it's complex. But it takes, you know, as Tex Winter used to say, making that ping pass, meaning catch, read, forward. Catch, read, advance. If you got a shot, take the shot. If you got the pass, make the pass. It's not about who am I passing it to, where are they on the floor. There are certain specifics about the offense, or should I say specific requirements that need to be met, and he's not doing it. And as you know, and you dealt with Phil over the years, he'll call guys out. But in my opinion, I don't think that's him being critical necessarily of Melo. But you and I both know that Phil is the king of using the media to his advantage. And today's players are a little more sensitive than when I grew up. So, yeah, I think he's learning. He's got to be a little more selective with his wording.
Busy with Will Perdue, former Bulls center, current NBA and Bulls analyst for CSN Chicago. I'm Steve Cashel. This is Chicago Bulls Live. Can every team run the triangle offense, Will? I mean, there's that argument of, no, it's only for certain players. But other people say, no, as long as you do it right, any team can run it. What's your philosophy?
As long as you do it right, yes. But you got to believe in it. And that's the hard part. I mean, you got to remember, even Michael didn't like it. Michael didn't want to run it. He was bucking the trend. But once he finally realized, regardless of how much he complains, Phil's going to run the triangle, then he accepted it and then worked on it. And, you know, he always thought that he could complain enough that people would listen because it's, you know, it's Tex Winter's offense. It's not necessarily Phil's offense. It's Tex Winter's offense. But once he realized that Phil was going to back Tex, he realized that he was going to lose that argument.
But he was better for it in the long run, right?
Well, 6 championships later, yes. But the one thing you do need, whether people want to agree with me or not, is if you think about who's had success running the triangle, the Lakers with Kobe, the Bulls with MJ, why? Because there are times, as you know, when the offense bogs down, that you need that bailout guy. And those were 2 of the best bailout guys in the league.
Fantastic stuff. Will, continued success with your broadcast work, and I really appreciate you joining us here on Chicago Bulls Live.
You got it. Anytime.
All righty. Will Perdue, former Bulls center and current NBA and Bulls analyst for CSN Chicago. Up next, a visit with former NBA player Juwan Howard, who grew up in Chicago, had a long NBA career. We'll talk about watching his son play now, and also he takes us back to his Michigan days with the Fab Four. It's Juwan Howard. Then later on, I'll be joined by Steve Ashburner, senior writer from NBA.com, and also Taj Gibson on his charity work. Stay with us. This is Chicago Bulls Live, the inside world of Chicago Bulls basketball and the NBA. I'm Steve Cashel on WLS AM 890. Welcome back, everybody, to Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890, a weekly program inside the world of Chicago Bulls basketball and the NBA. I'm Steve Cashel. Our next guest is Juwan Howard, the former NBA player, world champion, grew up in Chicago, had really a nice, long NBA career. And Chuck Swirsky recently sat down with the former Chicagoan.
So, folks, I want to pick up something. The other day I was speaking with Juwan, and he was watching his son play football, and we got into a discussion about as a parent watching a child, because Juwan obviously was a great star here in Chicago, went on to Michigan, All-American. You know the rest of the story, NBA champ. He's going to be a head coach either at the NBA level or the collegiate level, and people know how great of a player he was. But we're going to talk about a little about Juwan Howard as a parent before we get into his career and growing up in Chicago. So, Juwan, when you watch your son play, I mean, what type of emotions go through your mind and your heart?
Well, I get nervous, extremely nervous, more nervous than when I play sports. I guess because I really care, you know, how my kid is playing out there. And I'm like praying to God that he doesn't, A, get hurt, but B, I don't want to see him mess up. You know, I don't want to see him fail. But even though it's important for them to figure it out on their own, and at times you're going to fail, and you got to figure out how to pick yourself up. But as a parent, you know, my palms get sweaty just watching him compete. But he enjoys it, and I support him, and I have fun watching too. So I don't want you or the viewers out there to think that I don't really, you know, enjoy it or is it fun to me watching my kid play. I really have a great time watching.
Now, how old is your son?
Well, my youngest son, he's 13 years old.
So he's 13 years old. So when he's competing, everyone on that field or on the basketball court or the baseball diamond or whatever sport he selects to play knows it's Juwan Howard's son. Have you had a discussion about that and how he handles it?
Well, we've had some discussions about it, but he mainly talks more about it with either with my friends or with his mom. And he shares some things with them as far as, you know, at times he feels the pressure, you know, he feels everyone's watching him and going to judge him because of who his dad is. And, you know, as a kid growing up, you know, I can never relate to how he's feeling, but all I try to do is just share with him is that I just want him just to have fun and enjoy doing it. And at the end of the day, you know, whatever he decides to do, I'm going to always support him. And he doesn't have to play sports, you know, when he gets, you know, my age, when he finishes high school, if he goes on to college and he doesn't want to play basketball or football, I'm okay with that. I'm still going to love him. I'm still going to support him. But it's important for him to get his degree. And that's, you know, I think he knows that. But education is something that I'm more concerned about and I enforce in my household than anything.
I want to talk, Juwan, about growing up in Chicago. Give me an idea about your neighborhood here and how you grew up.
Well, I grew up on the south side of Chicago, which I'm very proud of. I'm a Chicagoan, diehard, and I love the city. The way I grew up, I thought it was a great life lesson for me personally. It wasn't the nicest neighborhood. It wasn't the most humbling area, but in my eyes, I thought it was the best area that I can, you know, experience in life. And if I ever wanted to go back and, you know, start all over again, would I want to change that? No, because it taught me so much about character, about how to work hard, be a survivor out there. And that's why I learned so many, you know, great traits by growing up in the city of Chicago, right there on 95th and Princeton, and CHA, Loden Homes, and yeah, it's the projects. But in my eyes, it was a place that I call home.
Juwan, I cannot relate to your lifestyle in the early years of your formative world. So give me an idea what it was like growing up in the projects.
Well, it was tough. There was always a moment where I got questioned for my toughness, or people tried, to figure out or test me if I can fight or anything like that. And I had to defend myself. I wasn't always picked on because I also kept myself busy with sports. So there are times when I'd be busy playing, either it was baseball or playing basketball at different rec leagues or outside at the park. So I always kept myself busy and kept myself pretty much out of trouble. But, I could have had my opportunities to, to join gangs and, as well as get out there in the streets and, do bad things. Now, keep in mind, I'm not saying I was perfect. That's not the case, or that's not what I'm trying to say at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
But my experiences along the way just taught me so much about how to grow and become a young man.
So, Juwan, was there a special place you went to in Chicago to play basketball or hang out, as far as either a Boys and Girls Club or a church or someone that you said, this is going to be my place away from home?
There was different basketball playgrounds that I used to go and play, whether it was in the wintertime or summertime. It did not matter. And it was a park called Abbott Park. And that was located right off of 95th and State near the Dan Ryan. And that was a place where it was my safe haven, where I competed and I learned the game of basketball. I competed and played against some of the peers my age as well as older adults. And it taught me how to grow. And as far as baseball, there was another safe haven place that I used to go, and that was with Jackie Robinson. And I used to play with different teams with the Jackie Robinson West. And that was the fun times that I experienced. And it was my escape. It was my escape from, from being a part of the crowd that, wanted me to get into some of the bad things. And staying busy with sports, was my, it was my way out. And surely it ended up turning out to be that way when I was fortunate enough to get a scholarship offer from the University of Michigan.
Juwan, before we talk about Michigan and the Fab Five, of course, I want to talk about CVS and also baseball. You mentioned baseball. How good of a baseball player were you?
Well, I played baseball up until my sophomore year in high school. I first started playing when I was 8 years old, I think. And I consider myself a pretty good baseball player. I don't know what my peers think, but or people that played against me. But I played first base, left field, and I pitched as well. So, I was very active with the sport, and I really loved the sport and enjoy. To this day, I enjoy watching the sport. And I am also, being a Southsider, I'm a big-time Cubs fan. So, I'm not one of those that is now jumping on the bandwagon. I've been a Cubs fan for a long time, and all my friends know it.
All right. Well, see what we learned today about Juwan Howard. Growing up on the South Side, but you're a Cubs fan. So you go to CVS. Now, there are a number of famous alums from CVS, Juwan Howard and
yes.
Dick Butkus.
Yes.
And so what was school like at CVS? Give me an idea about your favorite classes and someone that has left a mark on your life as a teacher.
Well, CVS was a great experience. I enjoyed it. I was at one of the largest schools in the city of Chicago. My freshman year, my class was 875 students, so it was a pretty big freshman class, and the experience walking through the hallways, as me being one of the tallest people in the school, I became well noticed, well recognized, and everyone knew who I was. One of the biggest impacts on my life at CVS was my high school basketball coach, was Richard Dick Cook. He was looked on as not only as a family member, basketball coach, but as a father figure to me. And I owe that man a lot because he taught me how to grow and become a young man. You know, I know at times I probably gave him a headache and maybe added more gray hairs to him. But he trusted, believing in me, and stuck with me, and I listened to him. And I didn't say I listened to him all the time, but I look back on it, and I just really, you know, was very thankful of the impact he had on my life.
What was your favorite class?
My favorite class, I would say, would be architect, architectural drafting. And
well, you're in the right city for it, with Chicago, with great architecture.
Yes. Correct. That's you're absolutely right. And to this day, I really enjoy just looking at architect. When I travel, you know, abroad to various countries, I find myself really like looking at the buildings, the architect, or homes that are designed with the, you know, whether it's modern design or super Tuscan or Mediterranean. You know, I enjoy stuff like that. And I think that passion came and started from high school with Mr. Soretto's class at CVS High School. Architectural draft.
Time for a short break on Chicago Bulls Live. When we come back, part two with Chuck Swirsky and Juwan Howard. Stay with us on WLS AM 890.
Everything you need to start your week smarter and happier. Big John and Ray. Monday morning starting at 5 on WLS AM 890.
Welcome back, everyone, to Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890. Now, part two of Chuck Swirsky's interview with former NBA player Juwan Howard.
Give me an idea about pro ball as far as when you were growing up as a kid in Chicago. Did you see many Bulls games live, or did you follow the Bulls at all when you were growing up?
I was a big Bulls fan growing up. I remember the old stadium right there on the west side, and I think I may have went to maybe one or two Bulls games, and only because when I was in grammar school, which is, you know, a lot of people call it elementary school, if you have perfect attendance, you were allowed to attend a Bulls game. And so we had a school trip and having perfect attendance, and I went to a Bulls game, and I was excited to see Michael Jordan as well as Gene Banks and Dave Corzine and I think it was like Sidney Green.
Yes.
Yeah. And I remember Reggie Theus being on the team. And, you know, it was an exciting group. And I've watched them closely. And, you know, that was an exciting time for Chicago and for me. And then, as you know, each year the Bulls got better. And Michael Jordan became, the superstar of the league, not just for the Chicago Bulls, but a superstar of the NBA. And he took that team to a new level. And I recall seeing a guy like, you know, Doug Collins as the coach. And, you know, Doug was one of my favorite coaches that I saw and growing up, and I have a ton of respect for. And like when I see him today, you know, he just don't really notice. But I was one of his biggest fans, and I just love the fact that he's so humble and such a nice man. And he's always nice to me, give me a hug. And sometimes I think he'll even give me a kiss on my jaw, and that just makes me feel special that, you know, wow. I used to watch Doug on WGN at my house, and here I am. I'm here interacting with him and talking to him. And to this day, he always tells me if I ever need anything or if I have a question about coaching, now that he knows that I'm into coaching, and he's like, hey, I'm there for you. And that means a lot to me. And so I'm just so fortunate and blessed to be, you know, in the round of game of basketball. And it's an honor. It is.
Yes, it's very cool. So when's the first time you met Michael Jordan?
The first time I met Michael was at Michael Jordan's camp. It was in the summer, and he used to have his camp, if I recall, it was up North Suburb at one of the colleges in North Suburb. And I was there with a buddy of mine named Marlo Finner, and we were hanging out at the camp, and we went to this room inside the gym, and in this room there was Michael Jordan sitting there talking to another gentleman, and then Michael introduced himself and shook my hand, and I was like, wow, this is Michael Jordan right now. I'm personally sitting in a room with Michael, a guy who's who sell these beautiful shoes, these Jordan Nike shoes, and he dunks, you know, just like with anyone in the world. He's always hanging in the air, winning game winners. And I'm like, wow, here I am just hanging out with Michael Jordan, a kid from the south side of Chicago. So that was my moment, and I never forget that to this day.
Great. So as your career advances, and everyone knows that you had a tremendous career in the NBA, the twilight Thank of your you. Career, you end up in Miami, and you play with Dwayne Wade, a Chicagoan who's now, of course, with the Bulls. What was your relationship, and what is it like with Dwayne?
Well, I have a really good relationship with Dwayne. It's something special that, you know, it's a brotherhood. And when having to play 4 years together and win two NBA titles together, and that right there, that relationship would never, ever end, because it's something that's special that will last a lifetime, because we're champions together. And to be in the locker room and to be in those heated moments of where it's games where it's a good times, and you know, you get in those battles where, you know, sometimes you lose together and you win together, but you know, you have those experiences in life that it's hard to explain, that, you know, only those who's in that locker room can really understand and recognize it. So that right there will always be remembered and always be appreciated in it. And more importantly, I will always thank him for him.
That's Chuck Swirsky with Juwan Howard, and many thanks to the Timeout Bulls podcast, driven by Lexus, available on iTunes. Our next guest here on Chicago Bulls Live is Bulls power forward Taj Gibson. Rachel Brady had a chance to sit down with the former USC star, asking him, among other things, what he does on Christmas Day.
Christmas is always busy for me. I always adopt a couple families, give back, feed the homeless, do a lot of different things, always try to be busy, but it's always about the time of giving.
Tell us about the family that you adopted, and how did that relationship start?
I've been doing it now for about 6 years, 7 years now. Always adopt a few families, different families, all different cultures. I try to just reach out to certain organizations and families in need, and just give them whatever they need, from TVs, beds, game systems for their children, whatever the kids want, whatever the parents need. We just fill the list and just get it done.
What's been your favorite gift so far?
It's hard to explain. We got big screen TV. I don't know. We just did so much. I would have to say, as far as the kids, just getting them game systems and supplies they need for school. The smiles and the looks on their faces, like they're in shock. They don't really know how to act. But the tears from the families each year, it's hard, but I'm happy to be doing it, and I'm happy to just be helping families.
How do you find time in this busy schedule, especially during the holidays, to accomplish all this?
Well, thanks to the staff, the Chicago Bulls marketing staff, Hillary and the ladies, they help me out a lot. We always pick a certain time, especially after a hard practice or some days. We just go, thanks to people at Target, majority of the time, they helped out a lot. They would close the Target probably after midnight or later, and we'll go in there and shop all night, make sure we get every single detail, every single thing, because it's very important, because we understand at the end of the day, the family really needs those things. I've been in a lot of households where they don't have heat, they don't have clean running water, and this is in Chicago, so whatever I can do to help the family is very big and really important to me.
Well, that has to be fun, too, after hours at Target.
it's fun, but it's still tough, because the NBA schedule is wearing and tearing my body, but I know it's for a good cause and for a good reason.
We saw you at the Pacific Garden Mission last, and you told us that it's all about seeing those familiar faces. Mm-hmm. Being part of this organization for so long, how enriching is that experience?
It's great. I remember my first year doing it, I was just a little intimidated because I didn't know what to expect. And then over the years, I just became like more vocal and more of an outgoing kind of person, just being able to talk to the people. And then after years of just doing it, I was able to get like real familiar with the faces, real familiar with the people from the streets. And then it's like kind of like family. So every time I go in there, I know how to interact with the people, I understand what they go through, because I really just put myself in the position that they were in sometimes. So I wanted to understand, I wanted to feel what they feel. And over the years, it's been great. And each year has been getting better and better, and I try to continue doing it every year.
You were telling us how some of these families don't even have heat during the holidays. How can people get involved when they're out Christmas shopping? How can they participate?
Just try to find a local charity or a local organization that are working with adopted children, struggling families, and just give your own intake. Some people try to use it as tax write-offs. Whatever you need to do, just go do it as far as just helping the family. But I just try to go in there and just do what I can. I always tell them, look for a family that's really in need. Sometimes they may come one, maybe one or two or three families, whatever they need, and I'm never going to really try to turn them away. I know my plate is already heavy as it is, but it's really hard. But just seeing the look on those families' faces the day that they didn't expect it is great. I'm trying to even work on trying to help them find families, help the family, even after we're done, try to help the mom and dads even get jobs, because I understand after the process we leave, it's still tough. But I just try to do my part and just try to be a outgoing citizen and help Chicago as many ways as I can.
I have one important question. What's on your Christmas list this year?
Be honest with you, my Christmas tree is up, but it has no gifts. I'm really one of the, I'm like the type of person, I don't really want anything. I just want good karma, have good friends, good family, good people around me. I wish everybody well. I'm more of a person that loves to give gifts because I'm already blessed enough to do what I love to do for a living. But I'm more of an outgoing person.
And a good Bulls win, right?
Yeah, that would be solid too.
That's Rachel Brady with Bulls power forward Taj Gibson. Up next, I go one-on-one with Steve Ashburner, senior writer from NBA.com. We'll talk about the Chicago Bulls and also the Cleveland Cavaliers and his pick in the West. Stay with us on Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890.
To make your drive home a little easier, Steve Dahl is here. 2 till 6 every weekday afternoon on WLS AM 890. Now back to Chicago Bulls Live.
Welcome back, everybody. Chicago Bulls Live, our weekly program inside the world of Chicago Bulls basketball and the NBA. I'm Steve Cashel. My next guest, Steve Ashburner, the outstanding senior writer from NBA.com. Hey, Steve, thanks for joining us here. Your analysis of the Chicago Bulls, please, through the first quarter of the season.
Well, let's start with the good news. I mean, they started better than I expected. Whether that was a testament to the work they put in even before training camp began. You know, you heard things about Rajon Rondo coming in and, just in sort of informal scrimmaging, acclimating himself to some of the guys with whom he'd be playing. So I think it translated early on. The veteran influence, obviously, of Dwayne Wade, along with Rondo and Jimmy Butler, I think it was pretty key. Now, they had a favorable schedule as well in terms of early opponents who had played the night before when the Bulls had rested. Things like that, the back-to-back angle on things. More recently, it feels a little bit like deja vu because we've seen this team play up to the competition and play down to the competition. The last couple seasons, to me, it has seemed a little bit like that when you look at the games that they've put together against, tremendous opponents, and then you look at the games where, you scratch your head for reasons why they could not take care of business on a given night, particularly the recent 4-5 stretch where just did not didn't come together for them. And I think they know it, and now to be, flirting with 500, it's a long season, and I hate to think that they squandered that early cushion needlessly.
What's the key, Steve Ashburner? Is it the bench? Is it the Wade bench and Butler and Rondo?
Yeah, I mean, the bench has been so underwhelming, and you can't put that much pressure on your starters to do it every night. Guys leave the floor. I mean, like every coach in the league that has the luxury of some veteran players, Fred tries to stagger guys as much as possible so that somebody's out there. But to just have, Jimmy with three guys or four guys, rather, that are just not producing, it's hard. And I think the newness and some of the inexperience of, the role players on this team has been showing. You know, they need to get seasoned quickly. Hasn't helped, of course, that Doug McDermott until Thursday night's game was not available because of the concussion protocol that, he was dealing with. You know, so very important as a floor spacer. And Michael Carter-Williams, too. You know, he's been out, continues to be out, and he is a nice, long-at-his-position defender that, you know, could really be helpful. You know, I think of the game when Jimmy had to take on Damian Lillard. And if, you know, Rondo was suspended that day, Michael Carter-Williams wasn't around because of the injury. If Jimmy doesn't have that sort of a chore defensively, you know, maybe he can focus even more on his offense, not be worn down, maintain energy better. You know, those little things add up.
Our guest, Steve Ashburner, senior writer, NBA.com. I'm Steve Cashel. This is Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890. Around the NBA, someone said the Cavs are bored after winning an NBA title, Steve, and having to go through another long NBA regular season. Not something they have on their wish list, but something you have to do anyways, right?
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, it is a challenge for, you know, the top contenders every season to get through those 82 games, to reach late April where it's really going to start to matter for you. That's hard in any sport for the very best teams. You know, just imagine what the Chicago Cubs will be dealing with next year when they try to repeat, defend their title. It's I thought it was going to be the problem for Cleveland from the start, but I think it only got pushed out a little bit because they came in, they played very well, they were locked in and focused, and they saw, wait a minute, this has been a little bit too easy. And, you know, we all sit here and we make our predictions on who's going to challenge them in the East, and there's a whole lot of nothing in terms of anybody at their level. And I think that probably they lost a little of that focus, and they thought, yeah, you know, we can kick a game here or there. I was at their game in Milwaukee that they lost, when they the first of the three in a row. And they sort of shrugged that off, almost amused. It's like, oh, well, you know, this happens. You know, but then they lost at home to the Clippers, a very good team, a team that, you know, they might end up seeing if both teams make the finals. And then, you know, the game against the Bulls as well, which they never want to lose. So you have to be careful that you know, that occasional, you know, shrugged off game doesn't lead to something worse. And I think it did. But, you know, LeBron's not going to let that get out of hand.
Speaking of LeBron, Steve Ashburner, is he still getting better? Or I know he mentioned the other day he's on the downside of his career, like Dwayne Wade. He put it in that reference, and I don't see any downside of LeBron right now.
He's got high mileage, let's be honest. He came in right from high school, unlike Dwayne Wade. So, you know, their clocks started ticking at different points as athletes. But, no, I don't think he's changing. I wrote off their opening game this season that the best thing for Cleveland would be for Kyrie Irving to lead the Cavaliers in scoring. And I think he might be. Last time I checked the stats, he was. I think that LeBron, his natural inclination is to be a facilitator. The triple-double thing, I mean, that's been a theme of this season for the NBA with Russell Westbrook and company. But in LeBron's case, he's always made a point to get players involved early and seek out assists early in games. I think if he can play that way, especially with the fact they don't have a backup point guard right now of any proven ability. They have Kay Felder, who's a rookie, backing up Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving has had injury issues in the past. It's a very thin line there. So if LeBron is going to be the guy that's handling the ball and creating, I don't think he has to put up big scoring numbers, and that's going to help. And he'll age, I think, a little more slowly that way.
Our guest, Steve Ashburner, senior writer, NBA.com. I'm Steve Cashel, Chicago Bulls Live. Hey, Steve, in the West, three-team race with the Warriors, Spurs, and Clippers. Is that the way you see it, or is it a two-team race?
I'll be honest with you. I see it as a one-team race, and then two and 2A after that. I think the Warriors are loaded. I do wonder how they'll do in the playoffs because of their lack of bulk. You know, the size issue and the way things get more physical. Traditionally, in the postseason, the Spurs, you know, they continue to amaze. And, you know, the road record that they compiled from the very start of the season, you have to take that seriously. You know, on the other hand, you know, they were neck and neck in terms of, you know, putting together some impressive streaks and accomplishing things and posting, you know, such a great record last year. And then all of a sudden they hit the postseason and it wasn't there for them anymore. And so I'm a little loath to trust too much regular season accomplishments by San Antonio. They don't have the look to me of a super team. I think they've won a number of close games. I think they're obviously, you know, they have savvy and veteran experience, but I don't think that they're, you know, on a talent level with the Warriors. As far as the Clippers, I'm not buying them yet. I think that they run way too hot from their coach on down. I think that they're big-time complainers. They are, you know, people talk about Golden State becoming the villains of the league because they stockpile all these great players with Durant coming aboard. I think the Clippers are the villains of the league. I think that when you see teams get that emotional and complain about every call, it's fun to watch the Clippers and you know, maybe see them stub their toes more often than not.
How about Russell Westbrook, Steve Ashburner, averaging 31 points, 11 assists, and 11 rebounds? With all those triple-doubles, amazing run. Can he continue, and will he finish with a triple-double average?
I don't think he will do that. Although I have seen, you know, some of those OKC big men sort of clear the way for Russell to grab the rebounds. To me, that's sort of the key. I mean, you know, for him to average more than 10 rebounds, assists, you know, as long as he's finding his guys, and assists, you know, these days are maybe a little bit cheap, depending on if you're at home or on the road. But let's face it, he's got boundless energy. He's one of the best, if not the best, athlete in the league, in my opinion. I picked him preseason to be the MVP for this season just because of being unleashed without Durant around to accommodate and take turns with. I mean, this is he wants to prove something. And as long as they can keep their record, you know, strong enough, you have to have a good record if you're going to be an MVP. I think he can do that.
Great stuff, Steve. Really appreciate your help.
Okay, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Steve Ashburner, senior writer from NBA.com. Well, that wraps up another edition of Chicago Bulls Live. Many thanks to our executive producer, Dave Zaslowski. Also, technical help from Bill Karambelis, Jonathan Bregman, and Jeff Van Gerten. For Chuck Swirsky and Rachel Brady, I'm Steve Cashel. Thank you for listening. Appreciate it. And coming up next, Bulls basketball. Our pregame show as the Bulls get ready to take on the Miami Heat. You're listening to WLS AM 890.